Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Oh, not too bad, Scott. On the hoops front, UC's 5-0. They are rocking and rolling their way to the Cayman Islands Classic final tonight against Wyoming, having beaten Buffalo on Monday, Richmond, slaughtering Richmond last night. And yeah, they will face the Mountain West Wyoming Cowboys tonight at 7:30 on Flow Hoops, for those of the 42 of you who spent $30 to get that service. Scott, thoughts on the season?
So far, I don't know how anybody can be like upset with anything that's happened. Like, they've looked really great. Like,
yep.
Of course, with the one qualifier that they've played, like, a bunch of, like, terrible teams. And, like, the first, like, decent team they played was Buffalo. And they got a bit of a challenge from Buffalo. They just weren't able to put that game away. And they, like you said, they just slaughtered Richmond from the opening tip. And that game was never close. Like, the offense has been, like, really solid. And the defense has been, like, excellent, just like you would expect. Like, they've held teams to one team to 51, one team to 48. And they had been playing a bit faster. Like, that's slowed down against Richmond for both teams' reasons. But, like, overall, like, I think it's just been a really great start. And we've seen a lot of encouraging things from pretty much the whole entire roster. Like, I don't think you could pick out one player, like, so far, who's been like, oh, that guy's been kind of a disappointment. Everybody's been kicking in and contributing, and like, the team's been shooting pretty well, except in free throws, where they're somehow like low-key terrible on free throws. And turnovers.
Yeah, it's...
And turnovers. We should mention turnovers, how they are really bad at turnovers now.
Yeah, definitely got a few thoughts on both of those. I think you're right. I mean, I think your point that, you know, this team is as advertised. Now, granted, you know, they're rolling through a schedule that includes Savannah State, Western Carolina, Coppin State, Buffalo, and Richmond so far. Buffalo is probably the toughest test on the schedule, and it showed. You know, they picked them in win the MAC East. They only lost 10-9 in voting to win the MAC in general. So that could be a sneaky strong win on the schedule. It could be a potential tournament team. Definitely probably like a top 150 win. They only beat them by 6. And, you know, maybe chalk that up to different environment, you know, playing in a high school gym. That's the first game of the tournament. So they, you know, maybe they didn't quite get their sea legs back from, you know, coming off the plane. I don't know. Overall, I mean, you're right. Like, the offense is as advertised. I mean, they were a little less efficient against Richmond, but I mean, that game was never in doubt. It was up 40-14 at halftime. I mean, they're just rolling through their schedule so far. Really can't complain of being 5-0. They're getting contributions from the true freshmen. I mean, Keith Williams looks absolutely excellent. I mean, I've never seen a freshman like him since, like, Sean Kilpatrick, who had no fear at, okay, Sean Kilpatrick and Jerome Cumberland, to take it basically end-to-end on his own and finish strong at the rim. Trevor Moore can shoot threes like nobody's business. Yeah, they're getting contributions from deep in their lineup. To your point, turnovers are a little concerning. I mean, so far this season, they're at a turnover per possession of almost 20%, which is like 200-something. Last year, they were at 15%, which was like, I think, top 25 or top 30 in the country. I guess my question for you is, like, is that a big concern, or is that just the natural drop-off you get from going from, you know, uber-efficient, extremely well, or extremely proficient at handling the ball, Troy Copain, to more of your faster shootery point guard in Kane Broome and Justin Jennifer?
I think so far it's been like the biggest flaw on the team, because it's not just like one guy who's having like the turnover issues. It's like Evans has turned it over a ton, Cumberland has turned it over a ton, Broome has turned it over
a lot. Yeah. A ton.
Yeah, like nearly 32% of his possessions, he's turned the ball over.
Yep.
Kind of outrageous. Like, and like Jennifer's been better, but like their point guard play, like, really hasn't been like that amazing. And Washington's turned it over nearly 20%. Like, yeah, four guys in your starting lineup who have just been like kind of like sieves with the ball, and then Williams hasn't been like that great. He's been like shown flashes, like then like he turns the ball over a ton. Like, this is like something like they could easily fix. Because it's going like haywire in the Cayman Islands.
Right.
Like, they turned it over 38 times in two games. And we all know that the schedule is about to pick up. Like, Wyoming is a pretty decent team. Like, if they have, like, another game where they just, like, kind of, like, kick the ball around like they did against Buffalo, like, there's a bit of an upset potential. But then, like, Xavier, Florida, like, Mississippi State, UCLA, like, they can't really afford to be this sloppy. And they have some kinks to work out, but just like with how they, like, overall been playing, like, they've been able to overcome it, like, which I think is, like, a positive.
Yeah, and I think that's that's what's really encouraging is that, you know, despite the turnover spike early in the season, their offensive efficiency is still slightly better than last year. So even though they're turning the ball over, I mean, they're still putting the ball in at a better, more efficient clip than they were last year. I think Mick sees it as a big concern. I mean, I think one of the reasons why we saw Justin Jennifer start last night against Richmond was because Broome turned over, what, like seven times against Buffalo, which, I mean, you could be Kobe Bryant. You're never going to want to see that out of a guard at all. At the same time, do those issues work out over time? Or do you just basically mask those issues by just being an uberly offensive efficient team? Like, I don't know if it's a huge concern right now. I'd be a little more concerned about the free throw shooting, especially because of that stretch you talked about coming up here in the next couple of weeks, more so than the turnovers. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It is an interesting question. Because, like, Broome especially, like, he had five turnovers yesterday. It's been like a six turnover game, a five turnover game. Like, yeah, it's been like a bit rough.
Like, the
free throw shooting, like, that is a bit of like a tougher one to get into, just because Cumberland's been like awful, 10-17. Like, Gary Clark's been really good, and Washington's been solid. I guess the free throw shooting is something you just hope that, like, guys just start knocking them down. So you have two guys who have been really, like, the main culprits for the free throw was, like, Williams is 1-for-8, and Sosame is 1-for-7. Then, just from, like, what we've seen with the rotations, like, I doubt those guys are going to get, like, a ton of minutes, again, when the schedule really picks up. Like, Sosame only played 7 minutes in the whole tournament so far. And Nick Williams is getting like 12 to 15 minutes. And you just hope that his form gets better and he starts knocking him down.
Right. Yeah, it was actually Jerron Cumberland that had 7 turnovers with Buffalo, so sorry about that, Cambroom. And I think it's almost like, to the free throw shooting, it's... So, taking out Mamadou Diarra, because he's barely going to play this year, he's actually leading the team on free throw percentage at 83%. But of the real contributors on this team, Gary Clark is leading the team at 83.3%, and then Kyle Washington is right behind him at 75%. Cumberland's at 60%, Broome's at 60%, Jacob Evans is at 73%, which is fine. Justin Jennifer at 72%, okay. You'd like to see your guards up there in like between the 70 to 80% all, you know, four of them. But I'm not sure if it's like, it's concerning. And then I'm also sort of encouraged in the long run, because I guess you'd have to hope that the guards, I mean, Broome and Cumberland are going to find their shot from the line, right? Like, Cumberland shot, I guess he only shot 64% from the line last year, but I mean, that's still better. And you'd hope that would improve over time. I guess it is, it's concerning and hopefully encouraging that they eventually find their shot over time from the free throw perspective.
especially Cumberland. He's like, as you mentioned, he was like in the 60s last year, and he's gotten off to a slow start this season. Mike, you're encouraged by the spike in the free throw rate, like for the whole team. Of course, a lot of that is because of the competition can't guard any of their interior players.
Right.
At the same time, like Clark's been really good. Washington's like been solid. And like like a lot of guys getting double-digit attempts. Like Jennifer's been to the line 11 times, and it seemed like he didn't get to the line 11 times all of last season. He only went to the line 14 times last season. It's like, if you can get like spikes from that, like, and get some of your better shooters to the line more often, hopefully
right.
that can help. But yeah, that's a bit, it's just it's more of an annoyance so far that you hope doesn't show up in the big game.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like this, the Bearcats have never been a good free throw shooting team under Mick Cronin. Like, that's been one of the things that's been really nagging us as a fan base. I mean, for the most part, it's been the offense and how they've, you know, had to grind out 60 points a game. I mean, that's in the past now. But it is a little discouraging that, you know, Kane Broom comes in from what is it, Sacred Heart, I guess, is where he came. Is it Sacred Heart where he came from?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was shooting 77% there last year, and he's sitting there at 60% now. So I guess, you know, hopefully, you know, he regresses to the mean and, you know, gets into the 70% range. But it's a little discouraging that, you know, we're 5 games into the season. We're like a sixth of the way through the season, and he's still sitting there at 60% from the line.
Yeah, but like you said, like hopefully it's just a thing once he starts getting to the line more and more often. Like, it builds up a bigger sample. Like, his shooting will, like, improve. His percentages will improve. His shooting,
right.
Like, he was really, like, off in the exhibition season. He's, like, lit it up from the field during the actual games, which I think is pretty encouraging to watch. Like the
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he and Jennifer are, I mean, Jennifer has an effective field goal percentage in the 70s. He has one in the high 60s. I mean, that's excellent from a point guard. And that's where it's like, I look at the turnovers and I think, yeah, you know, their turnovers have spiked this year. But, I mean, when Cumberland's knocking down 20 points a game and Broom and Jennifer are there with field goal percentages around 70, it's hard to really kind of knock the deficiencies that they've shown this season. I mean, maybe some of those deficiencies really come out against Xavier, Florida, and UCLA, but they're just so good offensively to go along with that still stifling defense. It's almost like you're kind of nitpicking at it, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But at the same time, like 20%, like a fifth of your possessions,
yeah.
You're just giving away.
No, it's not good. I agree. It's not good, but still.
It's like, that's just like I think the biggest thing that's really stood out, especially in this tournament, like where they've played some real competition, they've been kind of sloppy. Like last night, I guess like you can chalk it up to like boredom and like
relaxing
with like a giant lead. Like anytime like you just like jump on a team and you're up 40-14, it's hard to play a focused like second 20 minutes.
You mean when they have the steel drum band going in the background and there's 14 people in the arena? It's hard to stay focused? Is that what you're saying?
Believe it or not, not the most fun atmosphere to play in.
Right. And can we talk a little bit about how janky this tournament has been run so far?
Yeah,
like,
go ahead.
Against Buffalo, they had what, 4 or 5 like stoppages at the end of the game as UC was hitting free throws because they couldn't get the shot clock to work, or they couldn't get the actual scoreboard to work. They were missing 2 points at one point in the game. They gave points away to some random player who wasn't even playing. Is this like the first year of the Cayman Islands Classic? Like,
yes, it is.
It is. Oh, okay, so that'd be why.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'd never seen a game where like they had to stop and like, oh, this team actually scored 2 points We need to adjust the score. That was really weird. Like, cause I was listening to it on the Buffalo feed. That's the only one I could get on my phone. And like their announcers were confused as to why the score was wrong.
Well, like, it's not even like just the, like the arena they're playing in. I mean, it's a high school arena, whatever. I mean, that's what you kind of get in some of these early tournaments, and it's an excellent arena. It looks like almost like brand new. I mean, for a high school arena. But like they can't even get like the cameraman to like turn the pivot the camera like fast enough to follow a play. Like I just watching looking at some of the GIFs from like guys like O Varsity on Twitter and stuff like that. I mean, constantly the camera is like a half a second or two behind a play. So like you'd see a fast break and, you know, Buffalo's collecting the ball by the time like the camera actually gets there after Jerron Cumberland drives, you know, the length of the court. It just looks very small time for the 12th best team in the country.
It really is. When UC got announced for this tournament, I don't think we like all imagined it would be some like rinky dink production thing. But with like internet only and like no TV coverage to speak of, like it kind of shows with the lack of effort they've really put into having like a great production.
Like, I'm actually curious kind of how this whole thing, like Mick does a lot of, I mean, Mike Bone is definitely doing a lot of the scheduling himself. I mean, that's his job as athletic director, you know, building those relationships and, you know, getting those contracts and stuff signed with other schools and with tournaments. But I mean, Mick has a lot of say in that too. I wonder if this is like one of his tournaments that he really pushed for, maybe doing a favor to somebody. Maybe he just wants a vacation in the islands in November. But it's like, in the grander scheme of things, I feel like they're not, from an opponent standpoint, you're facing Buffalo, Richmond, and I mean Buffalo and Wyoming. They could be a top 100, 150 team if they do well over the course of the season, which is great. But their marquee team, even before they lost against Louisiana Lafayette, Iowa was only like 58th in KenPom. I mean, a couple of years ago, they were ranked in a really good team. But I mean, you're not UC's kind of carrying this tournament. Like, you'd think that UC would go into a tournament against a more marquee opponent, like a Big East opponent that's, you know, a top five Big East opponent, or even like a top five like Big Ten or Pac-12 opponent or something like that. And then just from like your point, like it's an internet only, you know, tournament that people have to spend $30 for to watch it. Like, how is that doing your brand any good by not even having a tournament that's contracted with ESPN or something like that? Or hell, even like CBS Sportsnet.
I don't know. But it seems like a lot of these like early season tournaments have really turned to be like almost internet only. Like the Battle for Atlantis, like one of the bigger name tournaments, only had two games on TV today, and the semifinals are on TV tomorrow in the finals. Like really, like only five games out of that whole tournament are actually on TV. With that like loaded field, and the rest are like on ESPN3. Like it seems like that's what a lot of the stuff has started to turn into, where like, oh, look online, you can watch the whole tournament there, which is like kind of annoying, like kind of cool, kind of annoying, except like when you have to pay for like a tournament like this, to watch like, I don't know, Lafayette versus Iowa.
Right.
Versus Wyoming. Like, games like you'd never watch. Like, I think there's a CBS stream out there where you could, like, pay $10 to watch the tournament. But still, like, paying $3 a game to watch UC play, like, Richmond and Buffalo, it's, like, obviously not something a lot of people were doing, because you don't hear CBS, like, stock going through the roof.
Right. And that's the thing, is like, even if it's like an internet only tournament, you know, some of these ones, like, I mean, they're at least on like ESPN3, which should come with most cable packages. I mean, that has there's potentially tens of millions of people that have access to ESPN3 or watch ESPN just by virtue of their current cable package, or they just buy the app separately. or they're like me and steal it from a friend. But like this flow hoops thing, I mean, UC's buried there. I mean, there's got to be less than like 1,000 people who actually watch that game online, live, and that's for the 12th best team in the country. And I don't know. I would just be really curious. I mean, not to kind of like, you know, go off on a tangent or anything like that, but I would just be really curious to hear, you know, Mike Bone's, you know, honest thoughts about that tournament, because he's basically paying for his team to go down to the Cayman Islands, beat up on a couple of 150 to 250, you know, ranked teams, and nobody's watching it. So I don't know. That's anyways, true. I digress.
It really sounds like one of those situations like you get in where like you have like a decent looking field, like with like you see like Wyoming. I'm just gonna throw Wyoming in there for no reason. Like Iowa. Like then just like hope that it like it would end up on like, I don't know, like CBS Sportsnet or something for the final. And like instead it like just like nothing is like televised at all. Like you
right.
Because like the whole, it seems like the whole point of like these games is to like get some game on television. Like they kind of just struck out with that part, which is really unfortunate. Because like you said, this is like a 12th ranked team in the country, like one of the most exciting UC teams like that we've seen in a while. And like if you just wanted to watch them on TV, they had like what, like two games so far. Like and the rest will be on TV. I'm pretty sure, except for maybe like Pine Bluff or Alabama State. I'm not really sure of the TV schedule, but like to have like a tournament where you actually step up in competition and like you like most people like can't watch it for various reasons is, I don't know, it's just frustrating.
Yeah,
now we sound like old people.
Well, I mean that I don't know, I just want to watch. I mean, it's great that they have like Dan Horde and Mayock down there, but It's so, I mean, we can listen to it on the radio, but I mean, I want to actually watch them play. And I don't know. I don't want to get into that.
Because, like, we only get, what, like, at most, we get 40 chances to watch the team play. And to lose out on any of them is, like, it's dumb.
Right, like, even, like, Alabama State on Monday is going to be on ESPNU.
Oh, yeah, because of the nobody's in school week.
So. Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's I don't know. The whole, I'm just a little surprised that UC kind of agreed to this tournament. I mean, I guess UC has to, you know, they can only pick certain tournaments. And, you know, they had a nice one last year, which, you know, they could have potentially faced Duke if they didn't, you know, fart among themselves, but yeah, it's a little disappointing.
And the fact that that's just been the most disappointing thing of the year so far is a pretty good sign of where things have been.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was going the way of the football team, I doubt that too many people would really be upset that it was not the games that weren't on TV.
And that's a great segue, Scott, because we have football to talk about. Not much football.
Yeah, sorry to ruin the fun talk.
Yeah, we'll maybe get back to hoops. But, yeah, season's officially over. There was an outside hope that at 3-7 they could have potentially won their last two games of the year and, you know, maybe gotten an APR bid or a bid through having a high APR if there's not enough 6-6 bowl teams, etc. But UC decided to lose 48-20 to ECU. So yeah, the whole off-season thing is not going to happen. Did you watch the game, Scott?
I did watch the game. And
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was overall definitely the most disappointing game of the season. Like, they've had games, like, where, like, they blew. But, like, this game, like, it was just awful. Like, they got like, completely, like, outclassed by East Carolina. Like, who, like, many people thought was the worst team in the league. And, like, the Bearcats are like, oh, no, just wait until we go there. And
just hold my beer.
Definitely. There was like a nice like second quarter like little to like make it interesting after just like getting completely annihilated to start the game. But then like the lack of like anything like defensively, like cohesive and like on either side of the ball, like there's like nothing that stood out all season. Like the defense isn't terrible, but like they give up way too many big plays. And they give up a ton of points. Like, and when you give up like a ton of points and a ton of big plays, like your defense like really suffers. Obviously. Like their defense is like number 80, like according to the efficiency. But explosiveness 91st, points 102nd. Which is out of like what, like 130.
Oof.
Or something like that. Whatever it is, it's pretty bad. And like giving up 48 to East Carolina is embarrassing, and losing by 4 touchdowns is even more embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, we always knew coming into the game it was probably going to be kind of a shootout. I think just because they had to win, I think I picked them winning 35-30. I mean, I knew it was going to be a bit of a shootout. I mean, they were going to. I thought it was going to be a bit of a shootout. I at least knew that East Carolina was going to score points. But it's just the manner in which they lost. Like, it just seems like defensively they've gotten worse and worse and worse. I don't know if the defense is that good. I don't, like, they were very, very strong in the first half of the year, and they just regressed so bad from there. It's just, it's 444 yards, 4 touchdowns to the air. Gardner Minshew was averaging 9.9 yards per completion.
578 yards overall for East Carolina.
God damn. It's just, it's like, where do you even begin defensively? Like, the defensive line, they couldn't get any push up front. The secondary is constantly chasing receivers all over the field. The defensive play calling is just wacky. Like, they're playing soft coverage when the quarterback's picking them apart for, you know, 3, 4, 5 yard drops. It's just all over the place. I don't understand it. And this is what the issue I have is that, you know, Fickell is a defensive minded coach. They played so well defensively in the early part of the season, and then all of a sudden they just lost it. And I'm deeply concerned with what's going to happen against UConn on Saturday. I mean, it doesn't really matter either way, but it could be another ugly one, it seems like. Like, UConn actually has a solid passing attack this year. And it's... I don't envy those people who are going to watch this one.
That is a good point to make about the defense, like, overall. Like, them in conference play, it's been really terrible. Like, you can, like, chalk up the Florida schools and, like, SMU. Like, oh, those offenses are really good. But then, like... just getting, like, run all over the last 2 weeks by Temple and East Carolina. Like, two of the worst teams, like, on the entire schedule. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's like, really frustrating. And, like, especially since they did have, like, an outside chance of making a bowl game with the Temple game, if they could have pulled that one off. And, like, now against, like, UConn, who is, like, obviously not good. But, like you said, like, they can score points. Like, they're... and like their offense can get down the field. So like,
yeah.
Who knows?
At least passing defense. Go ahead.
Like UConn definitely throws it well. Like, so yeah. I don't know. And with the secondary, like just overall. Like with so much like returning like talent in the secondary this season. Like, you wouldn't expect they'd be so terrible. Like, Jacobs is a senior. Like, Clements is a junior who played a lot last year. Like, Gilbert is a junior who played, like, a ton last year. I think he started every game. Like, Lyndon Stevens has been around for 4 years. So is Coleman. And, like, Stevens has been, like, pretty solid. At least he had been. And, like, Pierce is, like, a senior, a JUCO senior, I believe. Like, it just, like, so many, like... gigantic flaws in the secondary. Like, It's like really hard to think they're going to slow down UConn that much through the air.
Yeah, I mean, the passing offense has allowed completion percentages of 64% this year overall. 22 touchdowns, have only picked up the ball 4 times. One of those was a defensive lineman. And quarterback ratings in the 150s. Like the secondary is just terrible. And to your point, the players are not inexperienced. Like Carter Jacobs, I think this is like his second or third year starting. Lyndon Stevens has played quite a bit. Malik Clements has played quite a bit. I mean, Clements is a little younger, but I mean, he played last year quite a bit. Are they just not that good? Like, is that just what it is? Like, I don't know if it's the scheme. I don't know if it's the preparation by the coaches. I don't know if it's just the players, but maybe it's just that the players just are not that good, and we just need to wait for reinforcements.
I think some of it definitely has to be the scheme. Because they play, like you said at the very top, like they play really soft, and they don't pressure. Like, the habit rate for the linebackers in the secondary is, like, really unbelievably, like, low. Like havoc, like, just getting pressure, making plays. Like, linebackers is 103, secondary is 123. Like, they don't get interceptions, like you said. Like, I don't know, it's like, sometimes it's hard to see, like, what they do effectively. And they gave up, just like the passing touchdowns they gave up last week were 23 yards, 95 yards where, like, nobody decided to tackle. 22 yards and 20 yards. It's like none of those are short. Like, they just get beat for big plays. And like you said, like, Minshew threw for 444 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like, he just, like, lit them up. And, like, nothing against Minshew and, like, East Carolina, but, like, you don't expect, like, a performance like that to come against, like, your team when, like, he hadn't performed that well against anybody. Like, their whole entire season. They played basically the same schedule as UC.
Yeah, I mean, this defense is basically the stat-padding defense. Like, if you need a good performance out of your quarterback, just play UC just to give him a pick-me-up. I mean, to your point, yeah, Minshew, he was okay all season, but, I mean, he exploded against UC. It's just... I don't know what there is left to say. Let's say about this team. I mean, we kind of figured the offense was going to be behind the defense, and Hayden Moore hasn't looked great the last couple of weeks, but he did enough on Saturday to be okay. I mean, it's not necessarily his fault that his offensive line is garbage. Like, the center is getting 2 false starts for whatever the hell reason they're doing that. I don't know why the center gets called for 2 false starts. You're the center. It's your job to snap the ball. I mean, Jared Doakes was out. Mike Boone is still probably nursing an injury. The cast of characters around Hayden Moore is not helping him right now. But defensively, I mean, they've got to hold teams to less than 48 points. They can't just, like, let it be basically a walkthrough for the opposing offense. Like, I think if we're looking at the last couple of weeks and looking long-term at the program, because we have to. Like, we thought that the rebuild was going to start with talent, and Fickell's done that. But I'm getting a little concerned at the regression on this team. Like, I believe they're playing hard. I believe that they're trying their best, but I don't believe it's working, and I don't know if the coaching is really putting them in the best opportunities to win, even though they're not doing it. And I don't know. I'm starting to get concerned with how Fickell is managing this team. And I mean, that's not a fire Fickell comment. That's a, why are they getting 10 penalties a game? Why are there so many false starts? Why are there so many delay of games? Why does it seem like minor communication on this team is something that's hit or miss? I don't know. It's starting to rear its ugly head the last couple of weeks, and it's concerning as we look towards 2018.
That's a fair point. So I think we're at the point of the year now where we can really, like, start to go in depth with this type of stuff. Because we, like, a couple of weeks ago, whenever we like, questioned, like, the state of the program during the bye week, I think it was just Matt and I, like, we talked about, like, the coordinator hires, like, how good, like, they actually were. And, like, who knows if it's, like, I don't know, like, the talent doesn't mesh with the coordinators, which sometimes does happen, like, when, like, staffs don't have time to get, like, their a whole new roster in.
Right.
It's like, this team was not this bad last year. Like, they could finish with the same record, 4-8. But, like, this year just feels like so much more of a complete letdown. Like, granted, some of it was because they played a harder schedule. But at the same time, like, two of their wins, like, were gifts, pretty much. Like, where Tulane misses a 30-yard field goal to lose, and Miami throws an interception at, like, the 10-yard line to lose that game. Like, two games where, like, you just survive by the skin of your teeth against, like, opponents who aren't really that great. And, like, those are your only, like, notable wins of the season. So, like, it's just been, like, there hasn't been one game that they've played, like, since Austin Peay. Like, so against real competition. Like, you can, like, come out the other side and be like, yeah, that was a great effort all the way around.
Right.
This team really, like, deserved to pull that one out. I guess you could point to SMU because they took that game into overtime. But, like every other game, I don't know. It's just, like, hard to come away with, like, a ton of positives every week. Like, when you're just getting, like, constantly beaten by double digits.
Yeah, and there has not really been a good overall game all season. Like, you can almost make the argument that the offense took, like, what, until midway through the second quarter to get in the end zone against Austin Peay? I mean, granted, it was the first game of the season for the first, for this first staff overall. But it's like, if Tuberville had a fifth year, do we have similar results? Like, I think they still lose a lot of their games. They probably go, 4-8, 3-9, if not worse. Granted, I mean, I don't know. This is a spot where I'm in right now. Like, Fickell's got the talent coming in. That's great. He's recruiting better than Tuberville. He's got the team playing way harder and way more focused. Well, maybe not focused, but definitely harder than the Tuberville staff. The games are slightly closer, but in some regards, they're still getting blown out. Like, half the games have been blowouts this year. Does UC get the same result under Tuberville in year 5? I don't know. And that's kind of the problem, is that, like, we're trying to make assumptions about the staff, but it's kind of hard to figure out where the issues lie. Like, I think it's a little bit of everything, and it's kind of hard to tell what exactly is the one issue that's being corrected. Like, we know the talent level's being corrected, but is the talent, if you bring in more talent and still have a coaching staff that that has no idea how to call in a play before the play clock hits, is that really helping your talent? Like, is that really improving the team? Like, if you have a coaching staff that, you know, brings in excellent defensive players like Malik Van and Darnell Shields this year, but they're constantly playing soft zone defense against an East Carolina team that loves to pick apart soft zone defense, is that really improving the team overall? Like, that's the questions that I have going through my mind as we kind of approach the end of the season that, unfortunately, we're probably not going to have answered until, like, at least, like, this time next year.
I think the number one thing you can say is, like, the coaching staff, like, just didn't really put this version of the Bearcats into, like, great positions to win. Like, just, like, defensively, like, it's been, like, a big step back from last season. Like, offensively, like, they weren't good last year, and it's been, like, an unbelievable regression offensively. Like, their offense ranks 121 in offensive efficiency. Like, field position, 123. Finishing drives, like, points per trip inside the 40, is 109. Like, they're only, like, if they get inside the 40, they're only scoring like 4 points, which is like unbelievably terrible. So you should be scoring, the national average is 4.5 points, like, for some contest.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like, really, like you said, it's like hard to pinpoint like what like major problems are, because like you see, it's just really consistency is the number one thing, because like you have talent, like nobody would be like, oh, they don't have any talent at running back. But like then like the running back numbers like for the whole season are going to look pretty pedestrian.
Right.
Like it's just overall, like yards per carry, like Doakes and Warren like have nice numbers, but like overall, like 300 yards, 500 yards, 3 combined touchdowns. Like you make the receivers like have, like they have some nice receivers, but like Lewis has 600 yards, so he'll finish like around like 700 yards, like you would assume. And like he's like your only guy who's probably going to get over 500 yards receiving. And like we've talked about Hayden Moore enough. Like he's had a fine season, but like that's it. It's like if they had like I don't even know what you could say. Like their offensive line is just not good as well.
Right.
It's like they have like fine skill position players and like a bad offensive line, and like their offense is just garbage.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, is that a Denbrock problem? Is that a talent problem? Is, you know, signing Ben Bryant and Josh Wiley and, you know, the Jakari Robinson and stuff like that, is that gonna improve it, or is this just the offense we're living with because Mike Denbrock can't coordinate a position, you know, that side of the ball? Like, it's so early to say that I hate to say, yeah, that this is going to be fixed because of this, or, you know, this is going to continue to be a problem, but it'll be masked because of this. Like, I think that's kind of where the frustrating part is right now. Like, I was kind of hoping, like, coming into the season, we kind of knew this whole year was going to be a wash. We knew they were going to be bad. Like, you know, 6-6 was going to be outstanding, you know, if they had finished with that record. But I feel like I still have a lot of questions going into 2018, and that's where I'm kind of like, I'm starting to kind of get those little worried butterflies in my stomach about the whole program right now. But, you know, hopefully things turn around, I guess.
Well, it's hard not to, because like any situation where like you like legitimately have to question like the coordinator hires, it's like not a great sign.
Right.
Like we talked about it before, during, and now, like the season, like Denbrock, like kind of unproven, like got like didn't call the plays at Notre Dame, like famously was Brian Kelly, and like the offense hasn't been great. Like Freeman, untested defensive coordinator, and the defense has been like bad, and like not really doing anything like incredible. So. And, like, they do lose, like, some key talent next season, which is going to be a pretty interesting thing to see, like, where they end up. It's like, you lose Gray, you lose Boone, like, you lose Cogswell, who's been, like, a decent receiving tight end. And, like, we know, like, a lot of the big-name guys on defense they lose.
So, you lose your entire offensive line, basically, too, which is very concerning. Like, the offensive line hasn't been that good this year, but I'd rather have experience over inexperience if your starters this year were not very good.
And like, yeah, losing all your offensive line continuity, like, is another like really damaging thing, because, like, in some ways it's just, like, starting over again. Even though you'll probably have a senior quarterback with Hayden Moore.
Shuddered. I don't know. It's very concerning. It's just, I was kind of hoping to have some positive notes heading into next year, you know, coming out of the season, you know, something along the lines of, oh, Hayden Moore has progressed into a solid, if not spectacular, quarterback. He at least is more consistent, or Ross Drail is every bit the recruit that I thought, you know, the player that I thought he was going to be, you know, as a recruit coming out of high school. or there's diamonds in the rough in several areas that, that the staff has uncovered. But it feels like the only real thing we can see coming out of this season is that, yeah, Fickell is a good recruiter, and he's going to have a swath of talent joining this team next year. And overall, this team is going to be one more year experienced. But that's like, what other positive? I mean, we don't have to jump into this. We can save this for after the UConn game. But I mean, are there any other major positives that you can think about from the season that you can take into next year, other than the fact that they still play tough every single game?
I think that's the biggest. As like they haven't really like quit. Like they haven't had like anything where they've just thrown in the towel. And like you've seen like some of the younger players like step up and like have big. Like Perry Young has been like a revelation, and he's only a sophomore. And a lot of the big players with like nice defensive stats are like all coming back next year. That's like you hope like at some point like they found some footing with some of the younger players, like in like Dokes and Warren. Like you like to see what they can do with more touches next season.
And that's a good point. I mean, the young players that have been playing, they look good. Like Jared Dokes looks like a player who's gonna tote the rock for potentially 1,000 yards at some point over his 1,000 yards in the season at some point over his career. And his backups, Michael Warren, looks really good as well. And they've got running back talent coming in. And, you know, Perry Young looks like a hell of a player defensively. So maybe to your point, I mean, they just need time. They just need time to get those players in. I don't know.
Because, like, just taking a lot of it in off of just, like, one season, it's, like, hard to, like, look for, like, a ton of positives. Because, like, if all these guys are coming back in, like, like, not to say like they're the problem, but if, like,
right,
you bring back the same players and like whatever scheme or like, I don't know, just production in general from the coaching staff and the players, if that's low and like you just bring back the same people, like you just hope they get better. And like next year, like they can hit the ground running. But like, but then it's like next year, that's not exactly like they play like a, the softest non-conference schedule, because their first game is at UCLA. It's like they'll probably take a loss in the first game of the season next year, and then we'll have to like do the thing like, oh, how good is Miami? And oh, they play Alabama A&M. So it's like hard to get takeaways from like almost like the first month of the season next year.
Right.
Like they do play Ohio, who's like always a decent team. It seems like the Ohio game, like next year, will be like, and that's game four.
Like that could be a bit of a trap. They could definitely lose that game as it stands right now.
Yeah, because like they got like crushed by a Conference USA team this year that I don't think is going to win Conference USA.
So yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know. We should probably close on the positive note, though. Enough football talk.
Yeah, we can put football to bed for now, and then talk about it next week, because there's a lot more to be happy about.
Yeah, so like heading into the Thanksgiving season, because it is, you know, well, the day we're recording this is Wednesday before Thanksgiving. Scott, what are things you're thankful for? Not like personally, but like, you know, like something UC related.
Yeah, number one, I would say, I'll say Gary Clark.
Oh yeah.
Like Gary Clark, just like him being Gary Clark is just like one of the best things. Like this is his last season as a Bearcat. Like he's had like a pretty good start to his like senior season too. Like he really carried the team through the Buffalo game. Put up a near triple-double the other day. And, like, you just know what you're going to get from him every single time out. Like, his effort's always high. He plays hard, especially defensively, like, which I think is something that can, like, easily be taken for granted. It's, like, somebody just, like, busting their ass defensively and not looking for, like the accolades, like offensively as well. It's like you see it just from in so many levels. It's like if somebody like plays well on defense, like they want the ball on offense, and like Garrett Clark is just fine, like getting his scraps on offense, and if he has to like step up, like, he'll step up. Like, he's just like a really great player.
Yep, that's a good one. What else you got?
You do one. I'll think of another one.
Okay. Yeah, I think Gary Clark was a good pick. That was actually my pick, so thanks for stealing that. But, I mean, if I'm going to pick another one, I think it's got to be Justin Jennifer. I mean, I think, you know, coming into this season, we knew there was going to be a drop-off from Troy to whoever was going to be the point guard, and we assumed that, you know, that was going to be Kane Broome. And Broom has looked, you know, he's looked okay. He's not lining up the scoreboard like we thought he was. And, you know, as you talked about earlier, his turnovers are way up. I think he's been a little disappointing starting the season, but it's only been, you know, five real games, a couple of exhibitions, and then a scrimmage. So, you know, he's got time to kind of get his legs and kind of get acclimated, stuff like that. But in spite of the fact that he's kind of had a rough start, you know, to his UC career, Justin Jennifer has stepped up in a huge way. Like, it's nice that UC has a point guard like Jennifer who's been in the system for a long time. He's got flashes of brilliance. He's very aggressive offensively. He knows how – he's an excellent passer. You know, he's got his assists per games are 3.2, which is, you know, not Troy Copain levels, but they're still very high. His overall vision on the court, I think, is one of the better of the guards. He just never had that opportunity because he played behind Troy, and I think he did a little. It seemed like he did a little too much, but he's kind of started to come into his own, and it's really encouraging that as Broome is kind of trying to find himself as a Bearcat, UC can turn to a guy like Jennifer who can step in and really, you know, really improve the point guard position when Broome is having an off night, like we've seen during the Cayman Islands Classic. So that's definitely a guy who I'm thankful for on this team.
That's a good one. It's like Jennifer, like we talked about him a ton the past couple of seasons, since he was an interesting like young prospect they brought in, and like now that he, like you said, he's matured like into a junior, like he's really like seized his minutes and made the most of them. Like his 3-point shooting has come a long way too. Like he's like been a knockdown spot up shooter this season, 8 of 18. And, like the assist, like his passing has always been there. It's just been the opportunity that he's never really gotten because he's played behind like one of the better point guards in like modern UC history.
Right.
I'd say probably a top 10 point guard, maybe. Maybe in program history. I'll just say that so people can get mad if they didn't like Troy Copain for some reason. That's a good one. My second one will be that I'm thankful that the shootout this season is going to be pretty awesome. Even if Xavier loses to Baylor, which is like the toughest test remaining for like these two teams, like that game is just going to be like absolutely huge. Like a really good Cincinnati team, like Xavier looks pretty solid. Like they both do like things well on both ends. Like Cincinnati's defense against Xavier's offense is going to be fun. And it's like the game's on a Saturday, not some like a random ass Tuesday. I'm pretty sure it's on Fox Sports 1 or whatever, but that can't stop it from being like a really great game, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And having the game on Saturday, I think, just makes it better.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. And yeah, I'm going to try to watch the game. I'll probably, you know, either go to a bar or someplace and watch that because I don't get Fox Sports. But yeah, I think the makeup this year of the tournament, I think it's or not the tournament, the shootout. It's going to be a good one. I kind of wish it was more in the evening because I feel like Nooners kind of, you know, people are kind of slow to watch those. But on the other hand, it's nice that, you know, people can kick off their days with a shootout. It's going to be a very interesting game. I feel like this is like last year was two very talented UC and Xavier teams, but I think this year it's even ratcheted up a notch, which is kind of, you know, incredible to think about. I mean, when was the last time that UC and Xavier each had this talented teams? Like, it's got to be, I don't know, maybe since like 98, 99, that kind of era. But it's as much as I hate Xavier, as much as I want them to fail at everything they do, I love the fact that the crosstown shootout has national implications like it does. Like, two top 15 teams, potentially top 10 teams by the time we get around to it. It's going to be a really, really good game. Really good game.
And just having on like that first Saturday where football goes away. Just makes
yes,
it
that
better.
Too. Not to foreshadow or anything. My number two is Wichita State. I am so, so glad they are in this conference. When it was announced that Wichita State was going to be added, I was a little concerned just thinking of the addition long term. You know, Wichita State is tied to Greg Marshall. However long Greg Marshall is going to be there, Wichita State is going to be a top 10, top 15 program year in, year out, which is great. But what happens if, like, a Tennessee comes calling and tries to take Greg Marshall away? Or, like, I don't know, Coach K eventually retires from Duke and they hire Greg Marshall or something like that. Like, what happens to the Wichita State program when Greg Marshall isn't tied to it anymore? Do they fall out of the top 10, top 25, top 30? I mean, all of Wichita State's success are in this Greg Marshall window. So in that regard, I'm kind of thinking you got to find a full package from a basketball program if you're going to find that 11th team. It's got to be a VCU maybe, where they bring a solid TV market along with them, and they've proven that even though that Shaka Smart left, they've still got, you know, a pretty solid program going on there. With him gone. But at the same time, Wichita State is the number six team in the country. They are rocking and rolling. They had a scare against California, but they proved that they can basically overcome any obstacle and out-offense any other team, which makes them a very, very, very good addition. So, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah, that's a good one, because just like the implications for this season, like, a team ranked really high, and UC plays them twice. And like both of those games are going to be like pretty big deals when they happen, both on the weekend. So they should get like a lot of pub. And like I think UC's looked better than them. So like a good boost for the Bearcats as well, and the league as a whole, because, man, we talked about it enough, but like seeing like the league like just struggle with like the national spotlight, it's like been like pretty shitty like the past few years. And not to say that the league hasn't deserved it by only having like two good teams, but like now like SMU looked pretty solid. Like Temple looks like pretty decent, and like UConn and UCF are both 3-0. It's like, yeah, maybe like this is the year like the league like gets to that next level.
Yeah, and I think like for Wichita State, it's like you add an instant NCAA tournament bid, you know, to your point. So you go from, you know, potentially two to a minimum of three, and then you just kind of hope that, you know, hell, UConn, Memphis turn it around. You hope that, you know, Temple becomes a consistent winning program again. Maybe UCF sneaks in there. But, you know, you're guaranteed year in and year out, you know, as long as Greg Marshall is at Wichita State, that it'll probably be Wichita State, Cincinnati, and SMU, and then hopefully you add a couple more bids down the road if a couple more teams get in there, and then all of a sudden you have a very solid, you know, basketball conference all over again. So the Wichita State edition was I kind of questioned it in the beginning just from a long-term perspective, but it's working out so well.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. I have to come up with a third thing. This is going to sound bad, but my third thing is I'm kind of happy this football season is over.
Yep.
Because it's like been a lost year. I think we can all agree with that. Like, it's just been like a miserable season. Like 3-8 right now. Like a best chance to go 4-8. Like, it's time to like move on, like, to the next stage of the program. Like, is like, no matter what, like, people are gonna put this like on top of Bill's feet, or in like Fickle's feet. And if, like, they're going to put it on top of Bill, like, fine. Do that. Whatever. Use him as a scapegoat. And, like, let's move on to next season. Let's see what happens with this recruiting class, if they can stay together, if Fickle can get, like, any big additions. And let's just, like, turn the page and, like, and look for, like, something positive next season. Because, like, yeah. We've talked about how, like, terrible it's been. And it's just been really frustrating.
Like, yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Like, we're only winning one conference game. They're with a chance for two. In like year two, in Fickle's first year. It's like you hope it doesn't take out like a ton of steam from the program overall. But just like getting, like, hopefully we can get through like these dark days. And like next season they turn a corner and can win more than four games.
Yeah, and that's what's most disappointing is that, like, I mean, when's the last time we as a program came into a season expecting great things out of the football team? Like, I don't know, 2000, Jesus, like 15 maybe? Like Gunnar Kiel's, or was it 14? When was Gunnar Kiel's first year? I want to say 14? 14 or 15? When he, like, threw six touchdowns or something against Toledo?
Yeah, it was one of those two.
Yeah, so like we had a lot of expectations coming into that year, and there was a lot of a lot of hype built up before the season. No one really expected UC to be good last year. No one really expected UC to be good this year. I mean, even though that no one expected UC to be good this year, it's just the way they've dropped off the map from a football perspective is just shocking. And unfortunately, I don't think anyone really expects UC to be good next year. And it's just kind of a relief that we can finally close the book on this season to focus 100% on what could be a very special basketball season. It's disappointing that, you know, the golden age of UC football is so far in the rearview mirror, and who knows when we're actually going to touch that again.
Yeah, like, I think, like, that's the most disappointing part. They, like, because, like, the like UC had never had that level of sustained success. And, like, now it's, like, pretty clearly over.
Right.
It's, like, in that sense, it's very disappointing. Like, especially, like, just be in this league and, like, not come out with, like, an outright league title. But, like, now, like, the Tuberville misstep is gone. Like, for good. And if, like, people can't put that behind them and, like, next year, like, focus on, like, trying to get the program back to better heights, like, that's really all we can do. Like, cause now it seems like the conference realignment stuff was, like, 7 million years ago. And if, like, they try to realign again, like, where would Cincinnati be? Like, I guess I'm thankful we don't have to talk about that because there's no rumors. It seems like it seems like if conference realignment was now, it'd be like the Florida schools.
I know, that's the problem. That's what's most disappointing is that, like, the momentum driven by football, and there's so many schools that have caught up to UC. Like, UC is still among the G5, is still one of the better programs, but Houston's right there with it. South Florida's with it. Central Florida's there. Boise State, South Dakota State. Or San Diego State, not South Dakota State. Those are all very solid G5 programs that, you know, where UC could essentially say, hey, we are the best G5 team in football. They can't say that anymore. They're roughly in the top 10, but they're clinging to top 10.
Yeah.
So hopefully. So I get that.
So hopefully, whatever starts happening next year is a rebuilding to Back to a different kind of a sustained success for Luke Fickell and the program.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
what's your third thing, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with football. I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, I'm thankful for the young guns. I mean, this season was really disappointing. They're 3-8. They could very well be 3-9 on Saturday. Who really knows? But Perry Young has looked excellent as he's the best defender on this team. Perry Young, Jared Doakes looked excellent. Michael Warren a little bit worse than Jared Doakes, but only relatively speaking, because Doakes has just looked so damn good this year. A lot of disappointment this year. Not the finish and expect not the record that we all expected out of the team. A lot of issues still going on, but among the bright spots, at least we can look at the fact that, you know, the players who are going to be holding down key positions going forward are definitely proving their worth so far. I mean, they're proving that they're very great, they're very good players. That's something I'm thankful for. At least we have those little bright spots to look forward to over the next few years.
It does show that the coaching staff can find talent like Doakes and Warren, and like help talent that was on the roster last year, like Perry Young, and like help them like grow and get better.
Right.
And like you said, like just like watching those guys all season, especially Young, I think, like how he's just stepped up and been like one of the leaders on defense as a sophomore. I think a thing like that can't be understated, because now he's somebody you can like bank on for the next two seasons, like, and know what you're going to get out of him, like hoping he stays healthy at least.
Yeah, and that's a good point. It's like, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen over the next 2 to 3 seasons. That's something that we can point to and say, yeah, Perry Young's going to be a lockdown defender. Jared Doakes, you know, he's going to tote the rock, and he's going to be a guy that UC can turn to, you know, to grind out 4 or 5 yards a game and maybe spring one for 50 or 60. He's going to be an anchor back there. Unfortunately, I mean, those are few and far between right now, but I mean, at least there's those bright spots going forward. So yeah, that's what I'm thankful for. On to next year, I guess.
the Doakes Warren 1-2 punch for the next couple seasons, at least. Like, I don't think that can be understated. Like, you know, you have like two solid backs, and like you should be fine with your running game. It's like, hopefully.
Right. So that's it. happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Any parting words, Scott?
No, I can't think of anything. Go Bearcats. Happy Thanksgiving. If you're traveling, be safe. And we'll be back next week to preview the shootout. Thank you.
Ooh, that'd be a good one.